Transmission, Episode 16, January 18th, 2006.
Aloha from the island. My name is Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
And you're listening to The Transmission. This is a fan podcast devoted to ABC's hit TV series Lost. We are sending this Lost cast direct to you from Honolulu, Hawaii. Mahalo, everyone. Thank you for listening.
Thanks indeed. Congratulations on this show, first of all, to the cast and crew of Lost for winning the Golden Globe Award for Best Dramatic TV Series. Yay! On Monday. You know, they were nominated along with Commander-in-Chief and Grey's Anatomy on the same network. Fox's Prison Break and HBO's Rome, they're all good shows. You know, executive producer Brian Burke said that he thought Grey's Anatomy was going to win, but, you know, Lost took the honor, and so the Lost team can add the Golden Globe to their Emmy from last year. Also, for the Golden Globes, you know, Matthew Fox and Naveen Andrews were also nominated for Best Actor and Best Supporting Actor, but those awards actually went to Hugh Laurie and Paul Newman.
At the Golden Globes, Evangeline Lilly said that other stars were pumping them for clues on Lost. Mm-hmm. Names like George Clooney and Zach Braff from Scrubs, but of course they weren't talking.
Nope. It was great to see them, you know, doing the shaka sign on TV, you know, the Hawaiian shout out there. Congratulations also to J.J. Abrams, the mastermind behind Lost, as well as Alias and the upcoming Mission Impossible sequel. He and his wife just welcomed their third child, a son named August, last week.
If you're new to the transmission, here's the plan. We start with a recap of the new episode. We'll summarize what we saw tonight. Then we'll take a few minutes to discuss the episode in greater depth. We'll share what we thought about the episode in general, analyze the little clues and stuff that they might have thrown out, and see if there are any new answers or new questions to think about. After that, it's You All, Everybody, our feedback segment, where we'll look at some of your comments and observations. Then we'll move into the forward cabin, where we talk about production news, upcoming episodes, and other stuff outside of what you've seen on the screen.
That's where the spoilers go, so if you don't want to know, you'll want to skip that part of the transmission and instead just wrap things up with the Lost Line segment. That's where we sign off and leave everything to you, the listener. There's a lot of great feedback on last week's episode there, but we'll actually start it off this week with a great comment and a sound clip that I think you're going to want to check out.
As we always say, you guys are the best part of the show. Please let us know what you think about the show and share your own comments, observations, questions, and theories. Please join in the conversation here on the transmission by calling the Lost Line at 808-356-0127 or send us an email or audio file. You can reach us at lost@hawaiiup.com. That's lost@hawaiiup.com.
You can also get your ideas out there by posting a comment on our website at hawaiiup.com/lost. But, you know, really, we love hearing your voices, and, you know, everyone does, really. So don't be shy. Don't leave all the talking to us. 808-356-0127 is the Lost Line, or send an email or audio file to us at lost@hawaiiup.com.
With that out of the way, let's get lost. This is show number 16 of the transmission, following the episode of Lost that aired on Wednesday, January 18th, 2006. It was episode 11 of the second season, and it was entitled The Hunting Party.
So, what did we see this week in The Hunting Party?
Well, we saw a little bit, a very simple Jack flashback, mm-hmm. and we got a lot of action on the island.
Absolutely, a lot on the island. Let's start with the flashback. What did we learn? It was a Jack flashback.
Well, first we see Jack and his dad. They're in a meeting with an Italian gentleman. He speaks fluent Italian, and he, we learn, has a tumor resting on his spine.
Mm-hmm. And he's there with his gorgeous wife,
or no, daughter.
And they're basically seeking the Dr. Shepherd's assistance in this otherwise inoperable spine condition.
Right. She has heard of Jack through various medical journals, and she believes that he is able to perform miracles.
Because of what he did for his wife,
yeah,
Sarah.
Because of what he did for Sarah. And, you know, he caves in and he says he's going to try. He can't promise anything, but he'll run some tests and he'll see what he can do. Later on, we see Jack with a man. The man is in a hospital bed and Jack is looking over his chart. And Gabrielle comes in.
The daughter.
And they make small talk. And she mentions that it's very late, 4:30 a.m. So Jack says, well, I've forgotten all about the time. I got to go. So he hurries home to his wife. And she's awake and quite upset. He starts to get into bed. And
she just gets out of bed. She has to go to the gym and grade some papers. But before she leaves, she wants to have a heart-to-heart with Jack. And she tells him, oh, by the way, I was late, so I took a pregnancy test. And that definitely gets Jack's attention.
But it's negative.
Right. And he doesn't seem to be, you know, too moved in either direction about that. And he says, well, do you want to talk about it? And she goes, talk about what? And storms off.
So we go back to Jack's office. Gabrielle, the young Italian woman, is signing the release form. They're going to go ahead and do the surgery. And as they're talking, Dr. Shepherd, Jack's dad, comes in. There's a lot of tension between Jack and Gabrielle.
Yeah, they're getting a little close there. And definitely when his father comes in, they have kind of that guilty look on their face. And he goes, you know, have I interrupted anything? And she says, no, I was just leaving. But Dr. Shepherd, you know, gives his son a little bit of advice.
He says, you know, there's definitely a line and once you cross it, you can't go back.
And although, you know, Jack says to his dad, well, you know, I guess you'd know all about that, kind of like trying to be a zinger. And yeah. Jack's dad actually says, well, it might be okay for some people, but it's not okay for you.
Yeah, I wonder what that meant.
Flash forward a little bit, and, well, Jack is in the locker room pounding on the lockers and very, very upset. And it's clear that the operation did not go well.
No, the man died on the table, and Dr. Shepherd is trying to comfort Jack, saying, well, he was an old man. He'd been on the table for quite a while. There was really nothing you could do.
And of course, Jack's first thought is, oh, I've got to go tell his daughter, Gabrielle. But his father says, oh, I already told her. And that really upset Jack. I mean, clearly something that I guess he wanted to handle. And his dad said, well, let me remind you that I am the head of surgery. But when Jack goes out to his car, it looks like Gabrielle is waiting for him.
Yes, she is. She gets out of the car and she's very upset. She's crying.
Well, but she says thank you. I mean, she's not like mad. The first thing she says is thank you for trying. And she sobs into his shoulder and that quickly transforms into
the tension that they had earlier kind of comes
to a head.
Back and,
yep, and they smooch.
And they kiss.
But Jack freaks out and says, I can't do this, and storms off, leaving Gabriella to cry alone. And Jack gets home to his wife, and she's cleaning up after her mom had visited.
Right. They make small talk about her mom.
Well, actually, his wife asks how the surgery went, and he says that the guy died, and she says she's sorry. But when they go to do some dishwashing therapy, Jack confesses.
Yeah, he tells her that they kissed, and Sarah is very upset. And, you know, Jack realizes that he's been working a lot and he hasn't always been there.
And he says, you know, I'm going to change. We've not been talking. I'm going to fix this. And it turns out, though, that his wife is very upset for actually a different reason.
Her mom was there to help her pack because she's leaving. Sarah has been seeing another man.
Or, well, she says, I've met someone else. And, you know, basically she tells Jack as a parting statement that, you know, Jack, you're always going to need something to fix. Then she leaves. And that's it. I guess we know now how Jack met Sarah and now how he lost Sarah. But that was the flashback. Pretty straightforward. But it was on the island where all of the big action happened. So let's go over that. Meanwhile, on the island.
We see Jack. He wakes up, maybe from a bad dream, or maybe he's startled awake. But he realizes that Locke is nowhere to be found, so he gets up and starts calling his name. And he finds Locke knocked out on the floor, cold
in the storage room.
Right.
And he goes to attend to him, and all of a sudden he hears a gun cock, and it's Michael. And he's suddenly very antic, very excited, and he basically says, I'm going to go get Walt.
Right. He's all bug-eyed and making threats, and Jack asks, are you going to shoot me? And Mike says, no, but I'll shoot the computer. So he gets in the storage room and lets Michael lock him in.
With Locke. And he takes off. And when Locke comes to, he's like, you know, what's going on? What happened? And he's actually worried because now that they're locked in there, of course, nobody can push the button. But the good news is that they were expecting somebody.
Yeah, they're expecting Sawyer. Because Sawyer actually has to get his bandage changed.
Or as Jack called it, his Band-Aid.
Right.
And that takes us to the beach where Kate wakes up Sawyer by tossing a banana at him.
Yeah, she tosses him a banana and they banter and, you know, they hit the road for the bachelor pad.
Right, to get his Band-Aid changed. And, you know, there's a lot of googly eyes there. But when they get to the hatch, they, you know, immediately realize something's wrong. The computer's beeping. Once again, you know, people come into the hatch just when it's almost time is up. Kate goes to go type in the numbers because of the beeping, and Locke yells the combination through the door so that Sawyer can let them out. But as soon as Sawyer opens the door, Jack just grabs a gun and says, you know, Michael went off to go look for Walt, and we're going to go after him. And he gives Locke a gun, and Sawyer decides that he's going to join the Merry Expedition as well, the hunting party.
Right. And Kate wants to go too, but Jack doesn't want her to go. He says, you need to stay here and mind the computer.
And push the button and, you know... she goes, I can do things, I can help, but he makes her stay, and Sawyer, you know, actually doesn't defend her. I'm not sure either to protect her or because he doesn't want to contradict Jack at that exact point. So they head off. They're following Mike's trail, you know, the Locke is the tracker, and so he's, you know, leading them, trying to track Michael.
And Sawyer and Jack start to argue about Kate. Hmm. Sawyer is wondering why Jack, you know, didn't want her to come and was so adamant that she didn't come. And Jack kind of responds with a offhand, yeah, I know you love her.
Right, that's right, because of, I guess, what he had said in that haze when he was recovering. But before Sawyer can figure out what he's talking about, Locke says, you know, wait a minute, Sawyer, where, you know, which way was the ocean when you were coming back from where the Taileys were? And they quickly determined that wherever it is that Michael is going,
it's not where they came from.
Right, he's going in another direction. It's clear that Michael is headed in a specific direction, but it's not where Sawyer and the Taileys had come from.
Back at the beach, Sun and Jin are hanging around on the beach.
And, you know, Sun is being very motherly and making him wear a hat, and he doesn't want to wear a hat, but they see Kate and Hurley, and Kate is clearly agitated, so when Hurley walks up, they ask, you know, Hurley what the deal is.
And Hurley tells him that Mike has gone commando, that he's taken a gun and has gone to find my Walt.
Right, and Jin reacts to that, of course, because Jin has, you know, bonded with Michael and wanted to help him find Walt, so he starts packing up and he says, I'm going to head after them, but actually that upsets Sun quite a bit.
Sun says, no, you're not, buddy. You're not going nowhere.
Yeah, she says, I thought you were dead when you were on the raft, and I'm not going through that again, and believe it or not, you know, Jin puts the bag down and decides to stay. We also have another scene where Charlie and Hurley are hanging out in the bachelor pad.
Yeah, they're going through Desmond's record collection, and they stumble upon a curious little gem by somebody named Geronimo Jackson.
Right. And, you know, but they don't put that on. They pull another record. They put on this kind of lonely ballad, and they get to talking about women. You know, right. Charlie is wondering how Claire is doing without him, and Hurley is wondering what the deal is with Libby. And, you know, he kind of goes, hey, you know, it's the classic desert island scenario. If there's any time I'm going to hook up, it's going to be when I'm here on a deserted island. But Saeed comes in and they fill him in on what's going on. And when they list the people who decided to go off after Michael, they say, you know, Sawyer, Locke, Jack, and Kate. So, you know, we learned that she's off on the hunt as well. So we join the hunting party, and they're still, you know, bickering amongst themselves.
Sawyer is asking them to slow down a little bit. Locke wants to hang back too, but Jack wants to keep going. And they kind of Locke, you know, kind of tells Jack, you know, even if we catch up with him, we're not going to be able to convince him to come back.
Right. This is the second time that this has happened, and it doesn't seem like he's going to be, you know, someone listening to reason. But, you know, Jack is insistent that he's going to be able to bring him back. Locke also kind of gets up in Sawyer's face.
Yeah, he tells Sawyer that Hurley showed him the manifest, and he knows that Sawyer is not his real name. He knows that Sawyer's actual name is James Ford.
And he says, you know, why did you pick the name Sawyer? You know, who gave you that name? And Sawyer is very, you know, agitated by this. And he's like, what do you mean? Why would someone have given me that name? What are you talking about? But again, just as that chat is coming to a head, shots ring out.
A bunch of shots ring out.
Yeah.
And they call out Michael's name, and they look around and they find three shell casings on the ground.
But both Sawyer and Locke, note that there were a lot more shots that they heard, maybe seven shots, and there's only three casings. So clearly, you know, there's more than one party involved. The three casings are from Michael's gun, but the other shots were clearly from someone else. They continue their march, though, looking for Michael, I guess, undeterred, but they continue to be snippy with each other, and as night falls, Locke decides that he wants to go back.
But Sawyer doesn't. He's really gung-ho, and he's determined to stick around, and Jack asks him, are you here to get Michael, or are you trying to get revenge for getting shot?
I mean, he picks up that Sawyer's motivations are clearly not, you know, again, friendship for Michael, but something else. But, Sawyer throws it back in his face and says, well, you know, why are you so adamant about this? You know, we all have our own reasons. But then a mysterious voice comes out of the forest and says, I think you better listen to Mr. Locke.
And it's the scary guy with the beard from the boat.
MC Gainey or Mr. Friendly or, as I think Sawyer calls him, Zeke. He basically says, you know, it's time for us to have a little chat. You know, Locke, go ahead and make a fire. So they build a little campfire and have a little heart-to-heart.
Basically, the bearded guy, the boatman, he asks them, you know, do you go to somebody's house and you put your feet up, and do you open up their fridge and help yourself? And he tells them, well, you know, this is our island, and we're only letting you stay here.
That's right. And Jack, you know, immediately gets kind of cocky, and he says, I don't believe you. You know, if you really had all of this power, and, you know, if you really controlled as much as you said, you wouldn't have had to send a spy in to check on
Ethan,
us, right,
yeah.
Ethan? And he says, you know, I think that there's just one guy up there with a gun, and, you know, he's doubting the bearded guy's power. And, of course, Mr. Bearded Guy puts his arms up and says, light him up!
And this big, scary-looking ring of fire lights up.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, though, he asked somebody named Alex to light the fire.
No, actually, he's asked someone like Alex to bring the girl.
Oh, yeah, bring the girl.
And
that's
although
right.
We don't see Alex, we find that the girl that they have captured to use as leverage in this you-better-turn-back conversation is...
Kate.
Yes, they found Kate. Basically, the boatman says, there is a line in the sand, there is a line you do not cross, and this is it. And if you do not drop your guns and turn back, Kate gets it. And Sawyer gets really upset.
Says, I swear, if you touched a hair on her head.
Nice accent there, Miss Florida. But eventually, you know, Jack has to capitulate. He says, okay. And they all drop their weapons. And when Sawyer drops his weapons, he again, you know, has something to say to the bearded guy.
It ain't over, Zeke.
Yeah, again, he calls him Zeke. And I guess, you know, they give Kate back. Kate gets thrown into Sawyer's arms. And the others just disappear into the forest. And they head back, I guess, in defeat.
Yeah, with Kate all the way walking behind them. I'm sorry, Jack. I'm sorry. It was a mistake. But back at the beach, Sun and Jin are talking about how they felt having that discussion about Jin going off, and Jin tells her, well, I didn't like being told what to do, and Sun said, well, welcome to my world, pal.
That's
you told
right.
me what to do for 4 years. And so it looks like they're coming to some kind of understanding.
Yeah, again, you know, how far we've come from when we first met their characters. The hunting party returns to the camp.
They all kind of, you know, break up into groups. Locke turns to Sawyer and says, later, James.
Yeah, like how he said the same thing to Hurley when he called him Hugo. And
he also, Locke also stops by Claire, Claire's place, and plays with the baby a little bit, and you can kind of see Charlie fuming in the distance.
Very, very mad. But the last conversation that we see is Jack walking up to Ana Lucia.
Right. She's sharing her food with Vincent, or reluctantly sharing her food with the dog. And he starts to dig into her background, and he asks her, is it true that you killed one of them? And Ana Lucia confirms that, yes, she did.
And he says, you know, Saeed tells me that you're a cop. And she goes, well, I was a cop. But then, you know, Jack hits her with the big question.
How long will it take you to train an army?
And of course, music rises and the end. So that was The Hunting Party. That's the plot in a nutshell. When we come back, we'll take another look at this episode and just the things that we liked or little clues that we might have picked up. Okay, Jen, The Hunting Party. What did you think?
It was great. That was a good episode. I like that we're starting to get a hint of who the others are and what their intentions may be.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was actually very surprised, and I feel kind of bad that earlier I said it felt like, you know, this season is crawling along. All of a sudden, last episode, we see the monster a lot earlier than I thought we would, and this episode, we get a actual conversation and kind of an ultimatum with an other. So, you know, big developments on the island. I mean, the flashback, you know, it was very, you know, simple, nothing that we probably couldn't have guessed to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of figured it had something to do with Jack's type A personality getting in the way, because that's kind of the kind of guy Jack is.
Right, but there is the question of who broke up their marriage, and that's always an open question. We never know if there's going to be other links there. There were a lot of, you know, despite the serious developments, which we'll get to, there were a lot of, I think, kind of good lighter moments in this episode. You know, there was the gin and the hat scene.
Yeah, Jin is really embarrassed to be wearing this hat.
Oh, yeah, his facial expressions were just priceless. He's just like, I'm wearing this dopey hat, and of course, Hurley has to walk up and deliver his little zinger. And of course, there's the Hurley and Charlie man talk in the hatch and the whole thing with the music, which was kind of hilarious. You know, Saeed's like, this music is very depressing. And more Sawyer nicknames in this episode.
Yeah, he calls Locke Mr. Clean.
Right, and they had a chat about it because, you know, Locke asks Sawyer why he chose that name. And, you know, Sawyer's initial thought is that he's asking, why'd you call me Mr. Clean?
So and Sawyer says, well, look at you. All you need is an earring and a mop.
That was hilarious. He also used, what else did he call? He called Locke something else as well. Daniel Boone.
Right, the frontiersman.
Right. Sawyer got a lot. And, you know, again, even when he's being mouthy both toward Jack and Sawyer and toward Zeke or the bearded man, I'm not sure, I guess we can call him Mr. Friendly for now. But yes, you know, Sawyer was very mouthy, and it was good to hear his southern drawl.
I love his quick wit. That's, you know, like the best thing about Sawyer. He's just so quick.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of think where those come from. You know, you have the Hurley level of humor, and then you have the Sawyer level of humor, and they're both funny, but, you know, Sawyer is a lot more, you know, nuanced, I would say.
So, exactly who the heck do you think Geronimo Jackson is?
You know, I don't know. I mean, it was funny because they said the name so many times, it's got to be significant, but, you know, a quick Google search doesn't turn up a heck of a lot.
It's not a real person, I can guarantee you. It's something that the writers made up.
Right, and I don't get it because even Charlie says, well, I know music and I have no idea who that is. And actually, I'm kind of curious what song they did put on. I guess that might have been more of a traditional song, but it didn't sound familiar to me either.
It didn't ring any bells with me
either.
You
know, we were trying to go, and what is that album? And, you know, the lyrics in the closed captioning didn't help too much. So, you know, we've had a lot of music on the show. This was an actual conversation about it, but a lot of it was just unfamiliar. You know, I was looking at, as Charlie was flipping through the records, and again, none of it looked recognizable. There was like some band with Moo in the title. And
yeah.
I really don't know what that's all about.
And Jack and his dad had an interesting conversation.
Which one was that?
Where Jack is talking to Gabrielle, and his father walks in, and he tells Jack, well, it's okay to cross that line for some people, but not for you.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. And in that conversation, there's the implication that Jack's dad, clearly might have been unfaithful to his wife or Jack's mom, but also that there's something about Jack that means that even though he's a doctor and has human feelings like anybody else, for whatever reason, it, specifically for you, dude, you cannot mess around.
Yeah, I just, there's so many things that Dr. Shepard could have meant by that it's really interesting to consider the possibilities.
Speaking of possibilities and interesting conversations, the one between Sawyer and Locke about Sawyer's name was I think very loaded, specifically because, again, you know, Sawyer's being confronted about his name, about his identity, John Ford versus Sawyer, and specifically when, you know, Locke says, "Where'd you get the name? It's an interesting name to choose. Who gave it to you?" Like, it sounds to me like, you know, Locke recognizes that name.
Yeah, people have been theorizing because Locke's dad, it looks like he's pulled some fast ones on some people, that his dad could very well have been the original Sawyer, the mm-hmm. man who conned Sawyer's mom and caused Sawyer's dad to kill his wife and himself.
Yeah, I mean, that's been a fun theory. It's been around for a while, and it's fascinating that we might be moving into that territory because, you know, again, Locke's reaction seems to be some kind of pre-existing familiarity with the name Sawyer. The big conversation in this episode, though, obviously, is with Mr. Friendly, the bearded man, and everybody in the forest. And one thing that immediately, you know, I jumped out of my seat when Mr. Friendly says, "You know, a wise man, much smarter than me, once said that since the dawn of time, our species has been blessed with curiosity." I'm like, oh my God, that was the quote that was on the
Hanso Foundation website.
The Hanso Foundation website, exactly. A website that, you know, existed well before this episode, is sort of outside the universe of Lost. And, you know, you're always questioning, is the stuff on this website going to have anything go back to the show, or is it just sort of, you know, an exercise, a fun little alternative universe? Well, folks, that, you know, definitely validates that some of the stuff that was on that website that hadn't been previously mentioned may in fact be telling us something else about what's going on this show.
All the time surfing Lost websites is finally starting to pay off.
Yeah, we're going to have to pay more attention to those. And another, you know, thing that Mr. Bearded Man said, he didn't introduce himself, but he does call out another other's name.
He refers to Alex and tells Alex to bring Kate in.
Mm-hmm.
And Alex, as we all know, is the name of Danielle's daughter. Or right. We think it's her daughter. It could be her son.
I mean, that's a heck of a... No, I think it's the daughter, for one thing. But, yeah. I mean, I think that's clear. But we can't say for a fact that that's who that was that pushed Kate out of the shadows. But that's too much of a coincidence to that not be to be the case. So we're probably going to learn more about A. Alex and probably the Alex in an upcoming episode.
I noticed that a lot of attention was paid to Mr. Friendly's face. You know, they made a real effort to show his reactions.
Right, in close up. And actually, I was kind of distracted because it seemed to me that his hair on his head and his beard didn't seem to match. But in any case, yeah, whenever Jack is talking to him, they kind of show him listening.
Right. And when Jack confronts him with Ethan, you know, he mentions, well, if you were that strong, you wouldn't have had to send Ethan. He doesn't really have a reaction to that.
He says, interesting theory.
yeah, interesting theory.
And I thought that was great because it was like, I bet you that's directed at all of us psycho fans with our theories. But he does seem to react when Sawyer, you know, challenges him.
Yeah, Sawyer says, "This isn't over between us, Zeke." And there was like a visible, I think anyway, a visible flinch almost when Sawyer calls him that. There's kind of a reaction.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what that was. I mean, at first I thought, well, he's probably not accustomed to someone, you know, talking back at him exactly that way or with that kind of sure threateningness to it. But, you know, Jack was fighting back against him as well. It was like, was he just confused at the name Zeke? Or again, is there some kind of recognition or familiarity going on there? You know, in the flashback when Sarah, you know, wakes Jack up and says, "I took a pregnancy test," and he sat up, didn't you think that she was pregnant?
Yeah, I did.
I mean, it was like, okay, well, here we go again, you know, more issues about pregnancy and fatherhood and stuff like that. I was surprised, actually, that her news was that it was negative. And again, that Jack didn't seem to have, I couldn't tell if he was happy or unhappy about that.
Well, yeah, I think Sarah was expecting Jack to be a little bit more disappointed, and that's why she kind of left in such a hurry. I think she just wanted a more demonstrated disappointment, you know?
I mean, because he says, do you want to talk about it, but more in that kind of doctor therapy way rather than the husband way.
Right.
And although I thought it was interesting that she preceded her news with the phrase, don't worry, it was negative.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly it must have been an issue with them, in addition to the fact, obviously, that they haven't been talking much or spending much time together. But yeah, I thought the pregnancy thing was a close call, but didn't actually happen. As far as the flashback was concerned, since folks have mentioned kind of enjoying when we talk about this, I actually couldn't recognize most of the locations in the flashback here in Honolulu.
No, I had heard rumors that they were here in Mililani, doing part of it.
Right, for Jack's flashback. I know they were. They were sort of in the town center area, and that it was the Jack flashback, so I was thinking they were using either, what are the two medical clinics out here
There's a Kaiser clinic and a Straub clinic, and I know for sure that it's not the Kaiser
so
clinic.
It was, if anything, maybe the interior hospital shots, the hallways and stuff like that, might have been that clinic. But when they were outside, that didn't look like Mililani, though.
It looked like the Straub Hospital downtown.
The South King Street one.
Right.
I'm not sure. I mean, that the ground kind of looked like that, but when they cut around, I mean, again, I really couldn't identify those locations. I was, it's fun to try and pick it out, but it looks like that they were filming very tight to prevent that kind of identification in this episode. But this episode, a very good episode.
It was very exciting. You know, you have an ultimatum, a challenge.
Yeah, we meet the others, and they're drawing a line in the sand, like you said. And you have that whole conversation at the end about Jack and an army, not a little hunting party, not a little, group of guards or fighters, but specifically an army. I mean, it sounds like a very large scale confrontation that he wants to prepare for.
Yeah, it looks like kind of a battle between good and evil almost.
Right, it immediately is like, uh-oh. I mean, we had people talk about The Stand as an influence for Lost, Stephen King, and a lot of his stories, but The Stand specifically about two warring parties basically coming to a loggerheads, and that sounds like what we might be leading up to this season. But a very good episode. That's what we thought, or at least our initial thoughts on The Hunting Party. We'd like to know what you thought, of course, so please give us a call. You can send us an email or audio file or post a comment on our site. The Lost Line is 808-356-0127. Our email address is lost@hawaiiup.com. That's lost@hawaiiup.com. And our website is hawaiiup.com/lost. Speaking of feedback, though, let's turn it over now to you all, everybody. First things first, once again, we're going to share some of the first Lost Line calls we got on tonight's episode. Since we watch Lost here in Honolulu later than most people on the mainland, we can sometimes include your first impressions before sending out the transmission through the magic of post-production. So, fresh off the Lost Line, here are some of your comments on The Hunting Party.
Aloha, Ryan and Jen. This is Danny from Cartersville, Georgia, over on the East Coast, just weighing in on tonight's episode, The Hunting Party. It was really amazing. The line is being drawn in the sand. At the end where Jack wants to start an army, really, really getting exciting now. My favorite part, though, had to be the new nickname that Sawyer has for Locke. He gave him two in tonight's episode, but one was Davy Crockett, but the one that really gave me a chuckle was when he called him Mr. Clean. That was his best choice of nicknames yet. I did notice there was a painting in the hatch. I don't know if this has been discussed before, but you could see it behind Charlie and Hurley when they were playing the records in the hatch. And it looked like there was a skull and some fish drawn on it. I wonder if anyone's gotten any screen captures of that or if that's been discussed. I don't remember it being discussed before. But love the show, and just wanted to give you some initial thoughts. Thanks.
Hello, Ryan and Jen. I'm on the East Coast, Mark, over in Washington, D.C. I just saw tonight's episode. It ended a few minutes ago. It looks like if the lost story follows The Stand by Stephen King, that the battle lines have been drawn in tonight's episode. Jack Sawyer and Locke had a face-to-face encounter with Zeke, and it's noticeable that the others are in a circle of torches around them at night. And Zeke, who's one of the others, and Sawyer recognizes him as the guy who shot him on the raft, pretty much says it ain't over. And when Jack gets back to the camp, he talks to Anna Lucia about what, you know, her past as a cop, and says to her pretty much, you know, how soon can you put an army together? Because it looks like the, you know, Jack is not taken as easily. He's being told that he can't go past a certain point on that island. Good talking to you.
Hi, I don't know if this is the transmission, but I'm calling from the East Coast and about the lost episode I just saw. And I would like to say that I caught something very interesting when and I bet that a lot of other people did too, when the others said, the other guy who shot Sawyer said that they wouldn't be here, that the, like, Jack, he was talking to Jack, and he said that they wouldn't be here unless, if it wasn't because of them or something like that. And it got me thinking the first time I watched it that they are responsible for the plane crash, the others. But then after I watched it the second time, maybe it was that they, like, helped them survive. They could have picked them apart like they did at the Tailies. Thank you. Bye.
Hey, guys. This is Justin from Ohio, calling from, of course, the East Coast. I just watched The Hunting Party, so I thought I'd take the opportunity to call you real quick and say that I don't remember ever being so giddy watching a TV show when we saw the guy from the boat and he said those things to Jack and Locke, and we cut the commercial. I was like, wow, you know, I just couldn't wait. I was like grinning, you know, like it was awesome. Also, I haven't had a lot of time to notice anything or figure anything out from it, except that whenever the guy from the boat wanted Kate brought forth, he called for Alex, and Alex was, of course, Russo's son, I guess, that she wanted. We didn't get a look at him at all, but his name was Alex, so that might be a clue. I'm sure there were a lot of clues, but anyway, just calling to give you my reaction. That incredible episode. I think we learned a lot. We just have to figure it out now. So, okay, talk to you later. Bye.
Hi, this is Willie from Cleveland. An interesting moment I thought of today's show was, you know, when the others were saying, you know, you don't cross this half the island, but, you know, recollect and let the record reflect that when they actually took the boy, Walt, they were trying to leave the island. So, you know, I don't think they're being very truthful there. Just wanted to put my quick 2 cents on that there. Long time listener, you guys do a great job with the podcast. Really interested to see what everyone else thinks about, if anyone else caught that or anything else. So, yeah, thank you.
Hello, Ryan and Jen. This is Michael Cohn from Kansas again. I've just finished watching the new episode called The Hunting Party, and I gotta say, this was a very good episode. I really liked it. They have finally showed one of the others up close and personal, and they also mentioned Alex, which is Daniel's daughter or son, we don't know yet. Anyway, I've noticed that this bearded man, the other one, his gun was from World War II, and it was made in Germany. It's a German handgun. It looked like a Luger pistol, and it was used by Nazi troops back in 1942. I'm guessing this is a clue to how long these people have been on the island. What have you guys noticed? Thanks for hearing my call. You guys are doing a great job, and I can't wait to the next podcast. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, Ryan and Jen. How's it going? This is Brad from New York. Just finished watching this week's episode of Lost, The Hunting Party, and I wanted to give you a call on three observations that I had on the show. The first one was even before the show came on, then they showed the trailer for it where they said this is the 50th day of the castaways being on the island, and it just sparked a thought in my mind on how slow-moving this second season really has been. I mean, we, in actuality, have only seen about 7 or 8 days worth of stuff, and it just seems like there's been so many more nights and days on the show that it should be much later than the 50th day, but apparently that's what they were saying, so anyway. The second thing I wanted to comment on, and a lot of people probably caught this, was the scene when Mr. Friendly, or Zeke, as Sawyer called him, was talking to Jack and Locke and Sawyer, and he was about to reveal Kate. He asked Alex to bring Kate over, so just assuming that was Russo's daughter. And the last point I wanted to make, just from character plotline kind of thing, three guys going out into the jungle to find Michael. Don't you think they should have asked Mr. Echo to go along with them? I mean, he's obviously the biggest guy in the camp, and he is a great tracker. And, you know, you could see he's starting to build trust relationships with especially Locke, as well as the rest of them. And, I mean, Sawyer saw him in action. So it just struck me as a little bit ridiculous that they didn't ask Echo to go with them. Yeah, maybe they were trying to leave quickly or whatever, but they left two of their best guys behind, Echo and Saeed. So, you know, if it was me, I would have asked one of the two of them to go along. Anyway, love the podcast. I'll keep listening. Talk to you later. Bye.
Hey, guys. It's Jim from Philadelphia. I'm calling to see what you guys thought about Sawyer's newest nickname for the bearded man. Sound like you called him Zeke. Really didn't know what it meant. Thought with the big beard and all, Zeus would have probably gone better, but you never know. All right. Great joke, guys. See ya.
Hey, guys. Love the podcast. Just finished watching tonight's episode and came up with a weird theory that, I don't know, just kind of wanted to get you guys' thoughts on. I couldn't help but wondering as I was watching the Jack-centric episode if he or that character isn't some sort of Jesus metaphor. Maybe some sort of deity. There's a ton of religious quotes and themes and tie-ins in the show. And there's plenty of father and child relationship issues throughout the show, including Jack. Jack always feels the need to fix things and take on, quote, miracles. They keep using that word. And his father said something interesting tonight when he was implying that Jack might cheat on his wife. He said that may be okay for some, but not for you. What's so special about Jack? I know it's not a new theory, and the creators have tried to say that it's not this, but I still keep thinking it's some sort of purgatory or holding place or limbo or something. And perhaps Jack is a deity who's there to help the lost souls find their way, no pun intended. So, anyway, just thought I would leave that for you. My name is Adam in Atlanta, and I love the podcast, guys. Thanks.
Hey, Ryan and Jen, this is Camille calling from Brooklyn. Whoa, what a great episode. I have a couple comments. First, I think with the bullet that Sawyer shot that came back and shot him, I think there was a magnet thing going on. There was some sort of division in the island where the magnet forces changed. I don't know exactly what's going on. The second thing I want to say is I noticed that Sawyer called that man Zeke, and Zeke, as many people know, is short for Ezekiel. And I took a quick glance in the Bible, and Ezekiel was the watchman of Israel, and it seems that he helped facilitate the casting out of false idols and the restoration of Israel. So I'm wondering whether there are two camps on the island, just going with the Zeke theme, maybe a straight, more formal Dharma camp, the camp where Ethan and Goodwin came from, with people with clean appearances and clothes, and maybe they're getting regular shipments from the Dharma Initiative, and then a rogue Dharma camp with people with dirty clothes and the Peter Pan Lost Boys look and crude manners and the southern accents and things like that. And maybe they're trying to stick more strictly to the words of Alvar Hanso. And so maybe the Fuzies and the Losties and the Tailies are not only caught up in the matrix of the Dharma Initiative, maybe they're also caught in the middle of these two opposing forces of the Dharma Initiative. So, interested to know what you think about that, and keep up the good work. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, everyone, for your calls tonight. So that was some early feedback on the hunting party, but there's undoubtedly going to be more. And if you've got something to say, please call, email, or comment on our site even. There will hopefully be more to hear in our next show.
Now, from the transmission inbox, we got a lot of great comments on last week's episode, the 23rd Psalm. Of course, in that episode, we got our first long look at the monster and certainly a lot of religious references, right down to the episode title. Now, I think we're going to start with the religious stuff, though I'll admit right off the bat that these topics are you know, way outside of my expertise. You know, this show and this episode is definitely bringing out all the biblical scholars out there. And to me, you know, it's mostly just interesting that you've got all this stuff in a primetime TV show. But we got some really good background from you guys.
Right. Susan in Alabama, Jeremy in Oregon, Christopher in San Jose, and our friend Cliff over at Generally Speaking have all talked about Moses and the stuff Mr. Echo had carved into his Jesus stick. We also have an audio comment from Andrew in Seattle on our Lost Line segment, and lots of others too, so thanks guys for that.
You know, on the Moses front, from the discussion that Claire had with Mr. Echo about her son Aaron, Jeremy reminded us about the questions we had last year about Locke taking his shoes off in the bunker, which a lot of people linked back then to the story of Moses. Jeremy also writes that in the story of Moses, after the Israelites were free and were leaving Egypt, God sent two things to protect and guide them. A cloud of smoke led them by day, and a pillar of fire by night. Now, of course, we just saw a pillar of smoke, but Jeremy's mention of the pillar of fire reminded me first of the, you know, the iconic scene from last season of the light in the hatch coming on and shooting high into the sky.
Jeremy also reminded us that in the story of Moses, we have a character named Pharaoh, who's king of Egypt, and Pharaoh was killing all the babies in Israel so they wouldn't grow up and become a threat to the kingdom. Could this be similar to the others taking the children from the plane?
Good thinking there, Jeremy. And as far as the Jesus stick, we know that the show's creators told us to keep an eye on it, so of course a lot of people did, and we certainly saw more of the Jesus stick last week than ever before. There were lots of scripture references, you know, that he wanted to remember. Member carved into it, and some of you checked into them.
People spotted Psalm 23, of course, as well as Psalm 14, Titus 3, Revelations 3, and Colossians. Psalm 14 talks about good people and bad people, mm-hmm. and Titus 3 talks about bad people being saved and turning good. Revelations 3 was the one a couple of you focused on. There's a reference in there about being thought alive, but actually being dead because their deeds are incomplete. So you have another hint at the purgatory theory that the people have unfinished business to resolve on the island.
Yeah, you know, there's also stuff about people being taken away, you know, like our others or the monster taking people away, and also about worthy people being dressed in white. And, you know, one of our listeners has mentioned, you know, Echo had a white shirt and Jack did too as well. So, again, you know, some good food for thought on the religious front.
As far as the monster goes, it seems like the nanobots theory we talked about just the week before is looking like it's pretty popular right
Absolutely.
About now. Just like our caller, Michael Crichton's book Prey was the first thing that popped into many fans' heads when the smoke appeared to Charlie and Mr. Echo.
Yeah, David in Virginia, Jeff in Ohio, Doug in New Jersey, Patrick in Virginia, Jeff, another Jeff in New York, and many, many others made that connection, you know. You guys reminded us, for example, that the nanobots in Prey are both organic and mechanical, so that's just like the sounds that we're hearing on the show, and also that magnets are one of the ways that the nanobots were controlled. So again, you know, we have the magnetic properties of the island. Nanobots can also move like a big wispy cloud, but also exert physical force, like blowing up the trees or blowing them out of the ground or grabbing Locke or, you know, grabbing the pilot in season one, I guess.
Although, you know, I'm not really sure if the smoke monster is the same thing that grabbed Locke and the pilot.
You know, that's true. And I think that maybe the smoke we saw wasn't the monster or all there is. I think there's a lot more going on. The security system probably has more parts to it. You know, the smoke did appear after Locke was grabbed when it was trying to pull him into the ground, but it was only afterward, after they threw the dynamite in the ground. So it might have been different from what was pulling him. And it certainly didn't seem like the pilot had any, you know, awe-inspiring, oh, it's something beautiful, you know, encounter with the smoke before he got yanked out and killed. So again, you know, I can see that there might be something else. David also wrote that he thinks that the monster is separate from the visions of Walt or Jack's dad and from the others.
And outside whatever it is that the nanobots actually do or what their function is, the huge question is where all these visions of Mr. Echo's past come in. You
Absolutely.
Know, the flickers that you see in the dust cloud. Can nanobots read minds or show home movies or something?
You know, I know. I mean, on top of the question of what it is, you know, is it nanobots or something else? Obviously, the larger question is why? What's it doing? Is it sentient? Is it scanning or judging people? And like you said, or is it showing things to people? And is that it? Or, you know, is it just part of something bigger? You know, I don't know if nanobots can explain everything.
You know, now that we've seen the monster up close, a few Lost fans are actually a little disappointed in what it might mean.
You know, that's right. You know, when we talked about the nanobots before, and our caller said as well, you know, there was the danger that it might be just too much, you know, kind of a crossing a line in a total science fiction, being too convenient to explain things. And some folks on the forum have, you know, kind of been rethinking everything on the show now. We got an email from Jeff, kind of a rant actually in Ohio, that kind of summed it all up. He said, I'm sorry, but the black cloud has no explanation in this reality, and the show has lost some of its appeal to me. One can no longer speculate on the meaning of this or that, what something is or not, because the writers have now moved outside reality, and therefore there is no boundary or limits for one's thoughts. It could be anything, a ghost, a collection of souls, an alien life form, a billion self-aware testes flies acting in concert, even nanobots. Who knows anymore, because there are no limits any longer. So I guess he's unhappy. I mean, what do you think? Was a line crossed?
No, I mean, I still think that you can have a science fiction story and still have it remain plausible. You know, it can still be things that are completely, you know, within the realm of possibility.
And I don't think that, I mean, the orientation film, I think, was a turning point as far as, we're heading into sci-fi territory. But I don't know, my sense of the show from the very beginning was that there could be, that this was a science fiction show on some level. I mean, the basic premise is implausible. So if you're going to be talking about reality and stuff, you know, a plane breaking up at how many, many thousand feet and landing on the beach intact and landing in the ocean softly, you know, that was implausible as well. So I really don't think that there was any kind of betrayal here. I do think that if you were a person interested in the characters and the drama and stuff, that this might have been disappointing or a really big distraction. But I don't think a big corner was turned.
No, I mean, I am in it for the characters. I'm in it for the connections and the things that are going on between the characters. And I don't mind the science fiction. You know, if it's a science fiction answer that happens to explain everything, I'm fine with that. You know, because I think that you can get a little of everything with this show. You can
Absolutely.
Get a human, you know, show about human relationships and a science fiction show. And, you know, whatever they decide to do outside of It's All a Dream is good to me.
Okay. So there is a line for you still, but I'll say again, you know, we're still along for the ride. Who knows? There's still more answers, more mysteries. There'll probably be more questions introduced, more answers. Who knows where it's going to go, but we're sticking around for the ride, right?
Yeah, I am.
All right, so what else? A few questions some listeners had. You know, the whole thing about Michael chatting with Walt or someone on the computer, and specifically that he didn't tell Jack when he came in, especially since Jack was there to talk about Walt, and, you know, that whole scene kind of confused people.
Right. Maddie from San Francisco, Chris in Washington, and James in Chicago kind of wondered why Michael didn't say anything. He wasn't with Locke and Echo when the missing piece of the orientation film said not to use the computer to communicate.
That's true.
So why would he act like he was doing something wrong?
That's right. I mean, the two scenes were happening together, but, you know, Michael was in the other room. I don't think he was listening in. And, you know, the other question was, why did the screen go blank when Jack kind of came around and suspiciously looked and tried to see what it was Michael was doing? Some of you suspected that maybe Michael was hallucinating the whole thing, you know, which might be why Jack didn't see anything. And I thought that could be a possibility, especially because he was so manic in this episode. But when Mr. Friendly said tonight that, you know, I know Michael is not going to find us, I think it seems like he knows that Michael might be off on a wild goose chase or something. So there probably was a conversation, but I guess now we can also say it was probably not Walt on the other end. Charlie's question about how a short-range plane could get from Nigeria to the South Pacific was also a fair one. It'd be a heck of a long trip if it had to stop every few thousand miles to refuel and stuff, and it seemed unlikely that a plane filled with drugs would make all those stops, or even a plane with a dead body in it. Listener Dave went back to the theory that we heard about the island being able to move, though. And he said that, you know, perhaps the island could be off the west coast, or at one point could have been off the west coast of Africa.
Remember also that the numbers could be turned into coordinates. People have talked about that. The coordinates could either be in the South Pacific or in Nigeria.
Right, those two locations specifically. So that's a heck of a coincidence. Maybe that was it. Maybe somebody made a typo in the computer and, you know, the island took a little trip around the world. Who knows? It's really hard to say how much time passed between the plane taking off in Nigeria and crashing on the island. Listener Walter said that when Locke saw it crash, it was smoking like it had just been shot. And, you know, the military guys did hit the plane maybe as it was taking off, so that would mean that the plane wasn't in the air very long. But again, Locke's sighting was also a vision, kind of a dream, so he might not have actually seen the plane as it was actually coming down on the island.
And of course, we still really don't know why Mr. Echo was in Australia heading to L.A.
That's true, you know, very true. I mean, I don't know if he was looking for something, maybe for his brother, but... or his body. I mean, even if so, though, I don't know why he'd look in Australia. So there's obviously a lot more of Mr. Echo's story to get back to. Lots of open questions out there. Finally, a couple of comments on links between Lost and other stories. I do want to thank those of you who corrected me on the Agatha Christie link last week. And Then There Were None, her book, was about an island, you know, like Lost, and not about a train. I just kind of got it confused with Murder on the Orient Express.
We also have a couple of calls on our Lost Line segment about Stephen King's Dark Towers books. A few listeners found links to Charlie and Walt in the
right.
Dark Tower series.
Last but not least, Swan called our attention to a fantasy book trilogy by Robin Hobb, a.k.a. Margaret Ogden, and the book series was called The Live Ship Traders Trilogy. In those books, the characters visit Others Island, and the name is just one of the odd parallels with Lost. Swan writes that this island mysteriously appears and disappears, but if you manage to find it, there is a specific route that you must follow. Walk the beach, and you will find a lot of strange items have washed ashore. Take one of these items to one of the others, and she will explain to you how the item has meaning for your life, like a prophecy or psychic reading. But you must hurry and leave the island before it disappears again, or you will be trapped there forever. It is said that everything lost will someday wash up on the shore of Others Island.
So you got Others, a disappearing island, psychics, and artifacts washing ashore that are meaningful to you. That does sound very, very familiar.
Very, very familiar. So great thoughts, everybody. Thanks again for sharing your Lost insights. But that's it for feedback this week. We love hearing from you, though, so do call the Lost Line at 808-356-0127. Now it's time to look ahead.
We're now entering the forward cabin. This is where we talk about the stuff from behind the scenes on the show, various articles on Lost, and news about upcoming episodes and other production stuff. So if you're living spoiler-free, you're going to want to skip this part of the transmission.
All right, so on to the future. What did the teaser say was coming up next week on Lost?
Locke asks Charlie if he's using again, mm-hmm. and the voiceover tells us that Charlie's faith is being tested.
That's right. We see him running around and talking about Aaron being in danger, and I guess nobody believes him. We actually see Hurley and Libby together.
Right. I think Hurley recognizes Libby. He asks her, do I know you from somewhere?
Which is an intriguing possibility and one that had come up when we found out that she was a shrink. And of course, Hurley needs shrinks. And we do see, I guess, the baby being taken. And we also see the crib that Locke built.
The crib is on the ocean. It's kind of floating on the ocean.
And that made you, immediately when you saw that, you said that that was... Moses.
Again. Moses, yeah.
So more of that, I guess, coming along. And at the very end of the teaser, Saeed or someone yells fire, and we see a large fire breaking out. So whether that is the beginning of the battle with the others or not, it has yet to be seen. So let's go over our upcoming list of episodes.
Not too many more details beyond what we've already covered, although we do have some indication on when our next reruns will surface. Matt Rags, a writer for Lost, posted on the Fuselage his episode schedule for the rest of season 2, with the disclaimer that these things are very much subject to change. The schedule he posted gives us a rerun on February 1st or after next week's new episode.
Oh, boy.
Word is that the rerun will actually be from season one, the episode titled Numbers.
And that is an interesting choice, you know, probably picked to remind us of something that we're going to need to remember for the, you know, the episode that follows.
We'll have three new episodes, then 3 weeks of reruns in March. Starting March 22nd, another three new episodes, and then 2 weeks of reruns in the middle of April.
Oh.
Finally, starting April 26th, it will be all new episodes running right up to the season finale on May 24th.
And since the show creators have told us that there'll be 24 hours of Lost in this season two, that season finale, you know, number 23, will probably be another two-hour episode. All right, so there will be reruns, you know, there's the bad news, but, you know, at least not for 6 weeks. And, you know, I agree also with the creators when they said that grouping new episodes together is, I think, a lot easier to deal with than the kind of mix and match that they did last season. Anyway, you've been warned.
Episode 12, airing next week, is a Charlie-centric episode titled Fire and Water. In the flashback, we see Charlie and his brother Liam as kids, and on the island, Charlie has a surreal dream about Aaron, and Hurley and Libby get a little closer.
You know, Chrissy, our TV Guide correspondent, notes that next week's episode of TV Guide has a short interview with Dominic Monaghan, and he's asked about playing someone struggling with addiction. He said that the interesting thing as an actor is when you play that darkness. If you have friends who have baggage, it's frustrating, but as characters, they're fascinating. Also at TV Guide Online, Osiello said that Dominic told him at the Golden Globes that we're going to be seeing a lot of stuff about how Charlie is responding to the rest of the group pushing him away.
Remember, for this episode with Charlie and Liam as kids, we know about their mom, but not their father. There might be some daddy issues surfacing or something.
After our Numbers rerun on February 1st, episode 13 airs February 8th. Now, this was widely expected to be a lock episode, in part because our local paper here said Katie Sagal was in it, or Helen, but information since then seems to point to it being the long-awaited Sawyer episode instead. The title is The Long Con. Now, we just reported on a Sawyer filming location here in Mililani last week, and the filming at the restaurant that we mentioned was also apparently for Sawyer, so it sounds possible. You know, someone who said they were at the shooting at the restaurant posted at lost-forum.com that we're going to see a familiar face in that flashback. An insider scoop at the ABC board seemed to imply that the familiar face is Beth Broderick, who plays Kate's mom, Diane.
That's interesting. A lot of ladies from Sawyer's past are expected to turn up, from Mary Jo the Lotto Girl to Jolene Blaylock and Kim Dickens.
Hibbs is also expected to return, you know, the fellow he met with in the first season. And we mentioned earlier that he's also going to meet with another con man named Jackson.
Jackson? Like Geronimo Jackson?
Aha! Holy cow. Well, if that's it, that'll be something.
Because that would be something.
Again, I don't think there is a group called Geronimo Jackson, so wow, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, we think that that's when that episode's going to air. Matt Rags, the writer, had posted on the fuselage that Sawyer's episode was coming within the next 3 weeks. So, again, if that's true, counting this week's Jack's episode, it sounds like that it will be number 13, but you can see that this is kind of an inexact science.
Episode 14 on February 15th is said to be titled One of Them, and it's a Saeed episode. According to casting sheets posted on the forums, we'll meet a CIA agent named Inman, modeled after George Clooney, and Khalid, Saeed's brother.
Episode 15 on February the 22nd will be a Claire episode titled Maternity Leave. Matt Rags again, he said that he was a writer on this episode with Don Kelly. Secret Agent Man at Television Without Pity said that it was in this episode that we're going to meet a new character, a young woman who is discovered on the island and is one with nature.
Alex?
That's probably Alex.
Further out, who knows? We heard a lot about in an upcoming Locke episode, perhaps with an answer to how he ended up in the wheelchair and hints at more others and some twins. And Osiello reported from the Golden Globes that another Sun and Jin episode is about to start shooting.
On season two in general, lots of stuff surfaced here and there. Again, Matt Rags at the Fuselage said that we'll be learning more about Claire, her baby, and Danielle in the coming weeks. He also said that there is a Libby episode due this season.
USA Today said that we can expect more conflict between Locke and Mr. Echo, and the Chicago Tribune interviewed Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse, where they revealed one big mystery that will be answered this season. Why hasn't Hurley lost any weight?
You know, that will be interesting, and it's certainly something that a lot of people joke about, so it'll be cool to see how they explain that on the show. And you'd also gotten excited when you heard about someone having a role in an upcoming episode this season.
Yeah, Clancy Brown, one of my favorite actors. These days, we hear him every day at our house as the voice of Mr. Krabs on SpongeBob SquarePants.
Uh-huh. But he's one of those Hey, It's That Guy actors, right? I mean, he's been in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he was in one of my favorite movies of all time, Highlander. He was in Starship Troopers. He was the sadistic warden in Shawshank Redemption. He does a lot of TV, a lot of cartoon voices, and I am pretty sure he's not going to be a good guy.
Yeah, he's a very good bad guy. And, you know, he was also in Earth 2, which was that very short-lived sci-fi series on NBC about 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah, the one that Terry Quinn was in.
Right, so they both were in that series, and it came up in our podcast as yet another story that had a lot in common with Lost. Again, if you want to learn more spoilers as they come and go, definitely check out SpoilerFix.com, one of the more reliable sources of this information. But folks, that's it for this episode of The Transmission. You know, our podcast is made possible only through the support, encouragement, and feedback from awesome listeners like you. So thank you.
Mahalo, everyone. Once again, please do speak up and let us know what's on your mind. Tell us how you like tonight's episode, what burning questions you have, or cast sightings, or if you want to just talk story, whatever. Just please call our Lost line at 808-356-0127, or send an email or audio file to lost@hawaiiup.com. That's lost@hawaiiup.com.
You can also post a comment on our site at hawaiiup.com/lost. There you can also find information about us and our show, the link for the enhanced version of our podcast, and a map of the transmission listeners around the world. Be sure to add your pin to the map if you haven't yet. Some Lost Line calls are coming up now, starting with a great submission from Justin that touches on everything from Lost merchandise to the music and timeline of the show. But as for us, we're signing off.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Aloha.
Aloha.
Hey guys, Justin from Ohio checking back in with you. First of all, I wanted to send out a big mahalo to both of you, Ryan and Jen, for all that you do here with The Transmission, because each week you guys put in undoubtedly hours into making this podcast for all of us listeners, and it's well worth it for us. And I also wanted to say that while you both say that it's us, the listener, who makes this podcast and we call in to make comments, I'd have to disagree and say that honestly it's the both of you who make it. And I realized that last week because we finally had got a full episode of you guys talking more as opposed to call-ins, and I realized how much I really missed that. You know, because without you guys, we wouldn't have such a great place to come and listen and discuss Lost. So again, mahalo to the both of you. Having said that, ever since your theory cast, I've been wanting to call in and share something with you, and that's that in that podcast you'd mentioned at the end that if anyone had purchased any Lost merchandise to call and tell you about it. Well, I did buy the Lost fan pack from Creation Entertainment, so I wanted to give you a quick rundown on what's included with it. You get a black t-shirt that shows Locke and Kate on the front, and then towards the bottom, of course with the numbers behind it, it says, "The island is testing us." So, I guess that's cool if that's something you think you'd be likely to wear. You also get a little black knapsack with the Oceanic Airlines logo on it, which is kind of neat because it looks like it comes from the airlines. You get a missing poster with Charlie on it. It shows him there. It says, "Last seen September 22nd, 2004, Sydney, Australia. Charlie Pace." You get 4 8x10 glossy promotional photos. And now mine came with Kate, Sawyer, Locke, and a photo of Locke, Kate, Hurley, and Jack standing around the hatch. I think you might get different photos with the different packs, but I'm not for sure on that. You also get two bumper stickers, one with the Drive Shaft logo on it that says Drive Shaft, and the other says Lost and Loving It. You get one trading card with the cast in a group shot with J.J. Abrams. And then as proof of membership, you get an Oceanic Airlines ticket, like a mock-up ticket, and a little frequent flyer card, and mine had Hugo Rey's name on it. Now, finally, you get a DVD with highlights from the first official Lost convention in Burbank, California in June 2005. And among the people that are interviewed are, and I'm going to use the character names here so that people know who I'm talking about, Claire, Hurley, Jack's dad, the French woman, Ethan, and the psychic who talked with Claire before she left. Now, as to this DVD, there's what I thought was a big clue as to when this whole show is supposed to take place. Damon Lindelof makes some interesting statements that I thought you guys might find insightful. So I'm going to include a sound clip here of him talking about it in relation to the music on Lost.
We have to lean very heavily on Michael because we sort of had this rule going into the show that we didn't want to do needle drops, which are sort of the industry term for when you use like a popular song in the show. We felt that the isolation of the castaways would become sort of much more visceral if they were completely cut off from the world and sort of playing popular music unless they were hearing it. So we came up with the idea that Hurley had this CD player with him. So if he was listening to a song, then we would hear it. But once his batteries died, we stopped the needle drops. The other rule was you couldn't play music on the show that came out after September 22nd, 2004, which is when the show premiered, because they wouldn't have had it with them when they got on the plane. So we often, as Javi will tell you in the writer's room, try to say, wow, they're really only in October of 2004 right now, at least from their own perspective. Who knows where and when they are for our purposes. But for their purposes, the idea that they are sort of, they don't know who won the election between Bush and Kerry, like that hasn't happened yet for them. So they're still in, I guess, around Halloween of 2004 by their clock, which is, you know, sort of cool because we've now gone a year beyond them.
Thought it was interesting how he sort of hesitated before saying that October 2004 was for their purposes, not necessarily for the writer's purposes. So, you know, maybe the time travel theory has got some validity to it. You know, maybe they tripped into some time warp or whatever. But anyway, I thought I'd share that with you. And as to this week's episode, the 23rd Psalm, I completely missed some of those images in the fog, the monster that people saw. So, of course, we get bad reception here. That's probably why. But I'm downloading it from iTunes as we speak, so as to check that out. So thanks again for everything you guys do each week. I'm out.
Hey, guys. This is Drew from Severna Park, Maryland. I really agree with your guys' assessment of the 23rd Psalm. I thought it was an excellent episode to come back to from a long break. And I'm really excited about getting that first glimpse of the monster because it brings up so many possibilities. And I think one of the things that we have to examine is really the monster's behavior to determine whether or not the monster really is a monster. Because for the amount of people that have actually seen the monster really hasn't done too many things that are terrifying. It's been a while since I've seen season one. I just got the DVDs a few weeks ago, but I haven't had time to go over them yet, so my memory may be a little bit fuzzy, but these are some of the instances where the monster has seen someone. Obviously, in the pilot was one of the first people to see the monster and actually got killed by it. Now, I think I remember from the pilot that the pilot didn't really get a good look at the monster, so I'm not sure if the monster actually had a chance to scan the pilot to see like if it was a good person or a bad person or whatever. That's one of the theories was tossed around there, if that's what the monster actually does. But anyway, I don't think the monster had enough time to really scan the pilot for any information, so I'm thinking that might be more an act of self-defense. And the next person to see the monster was Locke, I believe, a couple episodes later. And then the monster just kind of looked at him, and then we pretty much he pretty much left them alone. Now, I think Boone may have seen the monster in Hearts and Minds, but I can't really say for sure, because I think I'm trying to remember if the monster was the reason Boone saw the Shannon hallucination where Shannon got killed by the monster. But I think that might have been caused by something else, but I'm kind of leaning towards that as much, but I obviously haven't seen the episode in a while, so I may be a little fuzzy on that. And I think after that, the only person that's seen the monster was Mr. Echo, and of course, the monster let them alone. Those are the main examples that I can think of, and I can't think of anyone else that has actually really gotten a good view of the monster, like, head-on. So I have to question whether or not the monster really is a monster, and I think the group thinks it's a monster because of the first experience they had with the monster, and that first experience was the monster killing the pilot. So my theory about the monster is that it's not actually that monstrous, because the QCs have a different perception because based off of their first experience from the monster. Now, I guess I'll let you guys go. Thanks for the show. I'm looking forward to listening to more episodes. Bye.
Hey, Ryan and Jen. It's Ken from Rochester, New York again. I've just finished watching the 23rd Psalm episode, and overall I think it was a good episode. I don't think it was great, but I think it was good after our six-week hiatus. I have to say, I like Echo's backstory in this. I think it was really surprising to find that, you know, a gentleman on the island had such a violent past. And the story with Charlie, I think he was telling the truth. I don't think he's using anymore, but I think he will start using because he had that stash put away at the end of tonight's episode. As for the monster, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but there was, when you got to see what the monster looked like from the inside, the little flashes were flashes of people's faces and of a church and Jesus on the cross, which look like little visions of, or flashes of, Echo's past. So I don't think that the monster is necessarily a monster. I think it shows people their past, and whether it's a good past or a bad past, but it doesn't really explain why it killed the pilot, and why it dragged Locke into that hole in the last episode of season one. As for Michael and the computer, I'm not 100% sure anymore that is Walt talking to him. It seems just a little eerie, the fact that, you know, Walt asked him if he was alone when he was typing to him. And what kid, you know, of that age uses correct punctuation on the computer? So, I don't know. I think that Michael might just be seeing things. I think he's seeing what he wants to see, so that's when Jack looked at the computer, whatever he was looking at was gone. So I'm not entirely sure that, you know, that's Walt. So next week's episode looks pretty cool. I don't think it looks as good as this one. It's just more of Michael running into the woods again looking for his son, but when Jack and Kate and everybody, when they get to that one part and that fire lights up and someone says, "This is our island," I hope it's not just, you know, some ploy of trying to attract more viewers, because they've done that with Jin speaking English and everything, so I don't trust the previews anymore. But hopefully we get to see more of the others next week, and if we do, it'll probably be at the last 30 seconds and then they'll end the episode, but that's Lost. Well, that's about it for now. Have a good show, and see you next week. Bye.
Hi, Ryan and Jen. This is Kyle again from Oklahoma. And I was just calling to show an observation that there was in Lost, in the last episode. They showed when Mr. Echo saw the black smoke, and they showed on lost.cupid.net that those were images from his past, and I thought it was interesting because they're showing him, he's actually not running from his past. Neither was Locke, remember, in season one, and none of them are running away from their past, but everyone else is. They're running away from the monster, running away from their past, which is really interesting. And I just thought that was a really interesting observation that goes into play. And I thought that was interesting. So, anyways, keep up the great podcast. Bye.
Hey, this is Travis from Rye, New York. First of all, I love your podcast. I wanted to tell you my theory after seeing the 23rd Psalm. When the black smoker monster approaches Mr. Echo and the camera pans through it, Echo's life flashes like a mirror right in front of his eyes. What I'm thinking all this means is that the monster has something to do with the Dharma Science Project that is still going on the island. In the orientation film, it says that they were researching psychology, among other things, and they can be testing the effect of fear on humans. In the past, when we've seen this monster attack, those who run from it get torn to shreds, such as Shannon in Season 1, when Boom was hallucinating. However, Echo stands right up to the monster and doesn't run, and this could be a theme representing standing up to your past and your fears. It can also explain the whole purpose of all the flashbacks on the show and why it's so significant. Another idea I have is that the black smoke is just only part of the monster, and plays the role the periscope does in a submarine. When the black smoke leaves, it gets sucked underground and could be sent by the real monster to scan or test survivors. Anyway, that was just my first instinct when I saw it. So thanks, guys, and keep up the good work.
Hey, guys, this is Doug from Woodbury, New Jersey. I just got done listening to your latest podcast on 23rd Psalm. Fantastic wrap-up, as usual. Really enjoyed it. I thought I would call and put forth my theory. Now, I don't know that this has been put forth, and this isn't a full theory. It's more of a partial theory of what's going on and why they're on the island and so forth, but in some commentary, short commentary on tonight's episode, or last night's episode, 23rd Psalm. First of all, I think that the reason that they are all there partially is because, just like Lost itself, there's many different levels to Lost, and I think the explanations will contain many different levels as well. I think there are multiple different, disciplines of science going on there, as far as electromagnetism, perhaps things dealing with the mind, and things like that, lots of different disciplines. And I think that's why they were pulled on the island to begin with. I think each of their pasts are being manifest in different ways. Perhaps parts of the island are reading their minds, which is why Kate saw the horse, which is why Sawyer saw the boar, which is all the different things that everybody is seeing is dealing with something in their past. And so I really think that it has something to do with that. Also, about last night's episode, Psalm 23rd Psalm, I think that the quote-unquote monster, the black cloud, perhaps that's another science dealing with the nanotechnology, whether that is what it is or not, I don't know. But it seemed to me that it was searching... searching his soul when it was looking into his, I can't think of his name, the cloud was looking at him and he was seeing all those things in his past. Now, I noticed that after it did that, now he did some really nasty things in his past, so it didn't drag him away. It confronted him, but it saw what he did in his past, and because he was, quote-unquote, a bad person in his past, he didn't drag him away. The cloud didn't drag him away. I think with Locke, it's totally a different thing. He was confronted, and he didn't do some really nasty things in his past. He was more or less a victim, and so he was a very good person, and therefore he was drug away. Well, we all know that he was saved from being drugged down into that hole, and he was ready to confront whatever it was, but I think he and the cloud saw exactly what it was in their past on both parts. So anyway, I don't know if I'm explaining this right, but that's my take on the 23rd Psalm. But anyway, keep up the great work. Really enjoy your podcast, and I will talk to you guys soon. Mahalo.
Hi, Ryan and Jen. This is Tom from Rhode Island. I wanted to call up and say hello. I love the transmission. It's pretty good. Thank you to Paul for turning me on to it. So I wanted to talk about last week's whole thing with Mr. Echo. Firstly, I think it's a little too soon to be saying that we definitely saw the monster. I think we most likely did, but I'm not seeing enough evidence there to say that that's definitely the monster. The monster seems to be something that lumbers about in the trees and moves them around and makes noise. I'm sure this has all been brought up on message boards, but I don't read them, so I'm probably repeating a lot of stuff. Anyway, I just don't think that's entirely the monster just yet. The other thing I wanted to say is that I have a theory about Mr. Echo and how he was, how he's good now. We might assume that he was repaired on the airplane tarmac by, losing his brother and saying, hey, I'm going to turn my life around and try to do some good. My brother's dead. I'm going to try to become nice. But I'm thinking maybe he won his soul back in the way that Locke won his legs back. When he crashed, he suddenly was like, hey, I'm not so Mr. Echo-y anymore. I'm feeling Mr. Echo light. Very nice. So that's it for me. I'm minutes away from the new episode, and you all, everybody!
Hi, Ryan and Jen. This is Doug calling again from beautiful Orange County, California. First, I want to thank you guys for putting together such an informative and entertaining podcast, and it amazes me on how you are able to do it in such a short amount of time. Thank you for that. A couple things I want to talk about. First of all, there's this overriding theme of redemption in the show where people seem to come to grips with their past and then they are killed off on the island. Seeing Mr. Echo holding his brother, retrieving the cross, and finally admitting to Charlie that he was a priest made me think that he had come to terms with his past and was experiencing a certain amount of redemption. I was half expecting to see the plane that was on fire to explode and to kill Mr. Echo at that point, seeing how that's kind of how Boone and Shannon went, where they have felt a little bit better about themselves and passed on. I wouldn't be too surprised if Mr. Echo's days are numbered. The other thing I want to talk about is the mole, which, you know, we don't really know how junk on the one website we saw. But I'm thinking, who could be left in the fuselage that could be a mole for the others or whatever it refers to? Obviously, it couldn't be anyone with a backstory because we know that they can't be connected to the others because they, you know, they have a past. What got me thinking is that maybe it's not somebody from the others that has infiltrated the group. Perhaps it's somebody in the group that has been brainwashed or coerced to join with the others or, you know, the island or what have you. And I'm thinking that maybe that's what happens when you see the monster and it chooses not to kill you, where it reads your mind and it, maybe it implants things into your memory. Because remember when Locke saw the monster, afterwards he was very pro-island. He was always talking about how beautiful it was, and he seems to have, his personality seemed to change somewhat. I think we saw the same type of transformation the other night with Mr. Echo. Once he saw the monster, he seemed to, his personality changed a little bit, and maybe he has now, if not been taken over, maybe brainwashed somewhat by the monster to either do the work of the others or to do the work of the island. Whereas, you know, you can see how Locke is really trying to support the island. He's adamant about entering the numbers, etc. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Mr. Echo from here on out.
Hi, Ryan and Jen. This is James from Nashville, Tennessee, calling about the episode, the 23rd Psalm, and specifically about the 23rd Psalm itself. And interesting that when it was originally quoted several episodes ago by Echo, a portion of it at least was quoted, it was misquoted, and that was discussed briefly on some of the discussion boards, that what Echo actually said originally was, though I walk through the shadow of the valley of death, instead of through the valley of the shadow of death, which is actually the King James translation. Now, at the end of the episode, the 23rd Psalm, the 23rd Psalm is quoted again, and this time, oddly, both Echo and Charlie misquote the Psalm together exactly the same way, again, as the shadow of the valley of death instead of the valley of the shadow of death. I thought this was interesting. I don't know why the writers would make that choice. I assumed originally that it was because Echo, as we discovered in the 23rd Psalm episode, was pretending to be a priest but was not actually a priest. And so I assumed that that was some indication that he was just quoting something he had heard, but maybe had never actually opened the Bible and read the thing himself, but had learned it by rote. Odd that both of them would put it that way, but interesting in this episode that they had just come face to face with this shadow that we had identified as the monster, this dark cloud. So maybe they had just walked through the shadow of death, or the shadow in the valley of death. Anyway, thought that was interesting. Thanks, you guys. Keep up the podcast. Bye.
Hi, Ryan and Jen. My name's Tedman. I'm from California.
I've been listening to your podcast, and I wanted to tell you guys, great job. I wanted to talk about a revelation that I had that is not talked about much about the latest episode, the 23rd Psalm. Most of the excitement actually seems to be about Echo and his backstory and the monster, but I've been actually more curious about his Jesus stick. He carves a lot of things onto it, and we see a couple of really good shots of what he has carved onto the stick in this show. One of the writings that he's carved onto there says Revelation 3. So I got a little interested, and I looked up in the Bible, Revelation chapter 3, and if you look at the second passage in Revelation 3, the entire passage is titled to the church in Philadelphia, and it's an address to the church in Philadelphia. And I thought, well, Philadelphia, that's a sort of modern word to have in a Bible. And if you look over on the Wikipedia site, and actually all over Google, you look for Philadelphia, you see references to a secret naval experiment called the Philadelphia Experiment. In fact, there was actually a movie made on this subject, but to sum it up, the Philadelphia Experiment was a naval, U.S. naval experiment to render objects invisible through the use of electromagnetism. Now, I think this might be either a blatant red herring from the producers, or it could just be some sort of in-your-face clue that they're trying to leave us here. But I haven't seen mention of this on any of the forums, and I thought it might be something interesting that your listeners might want to check out. So keep up the great work. We'll see you later.
Hey, Ryan and Jen. This is Andrew from Seattle, Washington. I love your guys' podcast. Never actually thought I'd call in, but this is too good. On tonight's episode, when Mr. Echo was carving on the stick different verses from the Bible, one of the prominent ones on there was Revelation 3, the chapter 3. So I went to my Bible to look it up, and this is what the first part of that says. These are the words of him who holds the seven spirits of God and the seven stars. I know your deeds. You have a reputation of being alive, but you are dead. Wake up. Strengthen what remains and is about to die, for I have not found your deeds complete in the sight of my God. Remember, therefore, what you have received and heard. Obey it and repent. But if you do not wake up, I will come like a thief, and you will not know at what time I will come to you. Kind of like that black smoke. Yet you have a few people in Sardis who have not soiled their clothes. They will walk with me dressed in white, for they are worthy. He who overcomes will, like them, be dressed in white. I will never blot out his name from the book of life, etc., etc., etc. But I just thought it was very interesting, the references to them thinking they're dead, and also the references to being clothed in white. Thanks. Like you guys a lot. Bye.
Good morning. This is Debbie. I'm calling from Minnesota. I just wanted to say that when I saw Echo staring down the smoke, the monster, immediately what went into my mind was a verse from the Bible from Luke 10 where Jesus says to his followers, behold, I give you the authority to tread upon serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy. Nothing can hurt you. And so since Echo is a follower of God, then I think that he believes that he does have the authority to stare evil in the face and that evil has to go away. Anyway, that's it. And thanks so much for your podcast. Bye.
Hi, Ryan and Jen. This is Jared from Omaha, Nebraska, and I just wanted to give you one of my observations on the 23rd Psalm. I had noticed right off the bat when Claire had approached Mr. Echo, she was dressed like she was in blue, which made me think of the Virgin Mary statue. It almost looked like her clothes were trying to reflect the statue itself, and I also thought about her baby was supposed to be this special child and some sort of savior or some sort of significant figure in the world, and that's why it was so important for her to keep her and to raise her. So I thought about the concept of Mary, giving birth to Jesus, who, was this obviously phenomenal figure in the shaping of the world as we know it. So anyway, nothing big. I just thought it was an observation or interesting observation that they, you know, tried to make her look, or at least I thought they tried to make her look similar to the Virgin Mary statue. Love the podcast. Keep up the great work, and take it easy. Thanks.
Hi, guys. This is Dave calling from La Crosse, Wisconsin again. Just wanted to call and say I am so glad that Lost is back on. Went through some major withdrawals there. I think I watched season one a couple of times just to pick up on more stuff again. But I wanted to call in on an observation that I caught on this past Wednesday's episode, Psalm 23 or 23rd Psalm. When Mr. Echo was sitting at the table with the two guys talking about how to smuggle the drugs out of the country, towards the end, when the two guys were talking in Arabic, I thought I heard the one guy say to the other, "Saeed, okay?" And then the guy nodded. So I had to play it a couple times, and even my partner thought he heard the same thing, "Saeed, okay?" So could Saeed be tied into the drugs or with Mr. Echo in some way? Boy, I hope Lost continues for quite some time. I'm just loving everybody's input and theories on it. And keep up the great work. Take care.
Hello, Jen and Ryan. This is Scott. I'm calling from L.A. First of all, I really enjoy your podcast. I find it very insightful, and it helps to feed my obsession with this amazing show. I wanted to talk about the last episode, 23rd Psalm, and something that Locke had said early in the episode when he was putting the lock on those, no pun intended, putting the lock on those guns. Michael had came up and Locke started reminiscing about silent films and how the robbers used to break into safes. And Michael had said, "Aren't you a little young for silent movies?" And Locke said, "Well, I'm old enough." And it kind of got me thinking to, there's been talk before about them being in some kind of, like a sort of time shift, like with the knife being 20 years out to date, and the date on the Dharma Initiative video, and if they are, you know, 20 years shifted backwards, that would make Locke, you know, a kid around the time of silent movies in the 20s and 30s, and it kind of just puts another little spin on his character and his connection with the island. I find him, you know, to be one of the most interesting characters, and be interesting how he develops. Also wanted to make a correction to something you guys had talked about in your last podcast about Echo and Locke when they met and got the other piece of the film, and it was Locke who was talking about it being a coincidence, and Echo said, "Do not confuse coincidence with fate." And it's easy to get confused because Locke, you know, had previously told Jack, you know, "I think this is all coincidence. You know, we were brought here for a reason." And that kind of makes me think that maybe he was testing Echo or something, just to kind of get a feel for his character, just like maybe the monster was reading him the same. So anyways, that's just my interpretation. Thanks again.
Hey, Ryan and Jen. This is Will from Dayton, Ohio, again with another Stephen King Lost tidbit. So instead of just the Langoliers that has the plane, I actually found another one. And that is the Dark Tower series, if you've ever read it. It's like all of Stephen King's books combined, including The Stand. And in book two, there's a character on an airplane who's being chased down the aisles, and he's a heroin addict. And just like in Lost, with Charlie, the airplane crew have kind of suspected something, and they follow him to the bathroom, and he's in there, and he takes his last hit and then tries to flush it down the toilet while people are outside banging on the door. And just as they're about to break in, something happens, like the gunslinger comes, and long story, but just like during Lost, just as they're about to break into the cabin door, the plane crashes. So, just thought that was an interesting tidbit there. I'd love to your podcast and stuff. Bye.
Hi, Ryan and Jen. This is Michael from Santa Clara, California. First of all, I love the show and look forward to it every week. I have a theory about some of what's going on the island and why only certain people are taken by the others that ties in with the various experiences certain castaways are experiencing as well. Now, we all know that the show draws inspiration from Stephen King, and being a huge King fan myself, this is my take on what's going on. King recently finished his Dark Tower series, a massive work made up of 7 books that all ties into most of his other works. In the story, an evil entity known as the Crimson King wants to topple the Dark Tower, which is the hub of the universe holding all the worlds together. To topple the tower, the king sends his minions to the various worlds to seek out anyone with psychic powers, be they telepathy, telekinetic, psychic, etc. These people are then taken to one of the king's strongholds, and they are made to use their powers collectively to chip away, erode, and eventually break the beams of force which support the tower, which also gives them their names. They're called breakers. I think the others are taking people with various levels of psychic talent to work together for some unknown purpose. Now, we all know that Walt had some psychic talent, and those taken from the Taileys may have as well. Certain members of the Fuseys have had psychic experiences, and that might be due to their own abilities being enhanced by the result of close proximity to this large group of psychic talents on the island. I also think another hint of this is shown in Walt communicating with Michael through the computer screen. Being Walt's dad, Michael may have some latent psychic abilities that form a bond between them. We don't know for sure if what we're seeing on the screen is actually being transmitted into the computer, or if Michael's just seeing it on the screen. This group of psychics could also have been responsible for bringing down the plane. The whispers in the jungle could be the jumble of thoughts from the group minds working together. The monster could be a manifestation of the group. They could be the ones ripping up the trees, could grab Locke and try to pull him under, and could have been scanning Echo's thoughts, which we saw reflected in the interior of the monster when the camera passed through it. That's my theory anyway. Like I said, great show. I hope you guys keep it up, and I look forward to more seasons of Lost and more seasons of the transmission. Bye.
Hey, guys. This is John from Redondo Beach, California again, but this is kind of a silly call because I know the producers have said that the numbers mean absolutely nothing, but maybe it was just a coincidence. 6 weeks off times 7 days a week is 42. Just thought that was kind of interesting. Bye.
Dear Ryan and Jen, this is Lucifer. I have been summoned to explain the incompetence, laziness, and stupidity of J.J. Abrams. Huge mistake. When Echo recited the 23rd Psalm, he made a huge mistake in his speech. Echo recited it wrong. Due to this, his brother's soul has been trapped in between worlds. This is foolishness, a disgrace. This better be explained in the near future. On the other note, this podcast kept me from going insane. I love the way Ryan recaps the episode with dire passion. You will hear from me again in the near future. Flesh of fallen angels. Lucifer.
This podcast is a proud member of the Hawaii Association of Podcasters. To find other great Hawaii podcasts and to learn about podcasting in Hawaii, be sure and visit hawaiipodcasting.com. The Hawaii Association of Podcasters. Spreading.